So welcome to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Alltag, and thanks to our supporting partner, Aura. Now, my guest this week is Nicholas Kirtley. With 25 years experience in delivering innovative and impactful solutions to clients across various B2C and B2B industries, Nicholas has had a focus on SaaS business development, sales, payments, hence the reason we're talking to him today, among other things, working capital optimization, corporate finance fraud, and customer abuse prevention. Now, he's currently the country manager ANZ at Riskified. Many of you will know, one of the leaders in online fraud prevention, chargeback management for e-commerce merchants, and the list and things could go on, but welcome, Nicholas.
Thank you, Paul. It's wonderful to be with you.
So thank you for taking the time to join me today. Now, before we get going, I always like to understand a little bit about guests. Talk to me about your background. Where did it all start? And I'm intrigued, going back when, let's have young Nicholas at school, short trousers, staring out of the window. Did you dream of being in the fraud industry?
It would be a lie to say that I did. But look, no, from my career perspective, I've served two life sentences up until this point. 10 years with ANZ Bank and 10 years with Commonwealth Bank, which is obviously a joke. That was a great experience and a very broad experience at that, working with small single person family businesses all the way up to large telcos and enterprise global retailers. But it's landed me at Riskified in the payment space, where I'm super happy to be. And really, my career has been carved out around understanding working capital, payments, the day-to-day financial operations of businesses. And I find that it's a space where the technology is changing so rapidly that you have to work really hard to keep up. And who knows what we'll be talking about in not only 5 years' time, but in a year's time. It's just an amazing space.
So I'm interested then. So yeah, the banking background's quite fascinating. When you were on that side of your career, were you aware of, if you like, people like Riskified fighting the good fight? And that's what, did you sort of start to get an awareness of what was going on over there, if you like? Is that what drew you?
It's a really good question, actually. I wasn't really aware of fraud, online fraud prevention services until about halfway through the 10 years at Commonwealth Bank, when we became aware of a company out there that was doing some interesting things, and that they were sort of the first iteration of online fraud prevention. They used fraud rules and gave the merchant a fraud score, and then the merchant had to work out what on earth to do with that score. If it was a risky score, what do I do with this? Do I decline it? Do I put eyeballs on it? Do I put it through some other kind of friction like 3D Secure? So it became apparent to me that it was a problem around about 10 years ago now. And I think the technology's come an awfully long way since then. It's starting to get really interesting now.
Yeah, it is. I do remember those early days, and these scores were churned out, and you've just got a bank of baffled retailers, brands, the merchants going, well, and the vendors were saying, well, you know, what's your fraud profile? And you're going, well, I don't really know. You need to tell me, because we're trying to understand it. And you had banks of people on the manual review desks, if you like, and the whole thing ground to a halt for often days on end while people figured out what to do. So it was an interesting time, wasn't it?
It was. And I think it was good at the time when fraud rules first came out. It helped solve a problem, because prior to that, there was no protection and, you know, chargebacks were starting to get really out of control, but it created other problems, false declines of legitimate customers and delays dispatching goods and adding friction to the checkout process. So, you know, it served its purpose and it was good at its time, but the technology's come an awfully long way since then. And that's the space that Riskified plays in now, which is super exciting.
Yeah, and then, you know, talking of Riskified, for those that don't know the business, and let's assume there's one or two people out there, how would you describe Riskified, what it offers, and how it can serve people?
Yeah, well, it ties into the conversation we're having, right? Which is that Riskified was the first company in the world to pioneer the use of machine learning to attack online fraud prevention versus using fraud rules. And that was a quantum leap. It was around about 12 years ago now, but that was a huge change. And what our co-founders recognized was that machine learning is a far more optimal technology for fraud prevention for two reasons. One is it can self-learn, you know, it can self-optimize and recognize fraud patterns and legitimate customer shopping patterns in real time and adjust to changes without changing rules. But it can also provide such a high level of accuracy that you have an extremely low number of false declines. So that Riskify was the pioneer in using that technology and the pioneer in providing what's called a covered fraud decision. And by a covered fraud decision, I mean that we reimburse our clients for fraud chargebacks under our watch. And that was radical at the time. Like prior to that, every company that was in the fraud prevention space, and still most today, will give a fraud score or a fraud decision, but they won't put their skin on in the game or their money where their mouth is and reimburse their clients if a chargeback occurs on their watch. So that really was a big thing 12 years ago, and it's still a big thing today. We're really the only company that's still actively pushing that solution. A few others tried to offer it, and it's hard to do that if you don't have great technology and great machine learning. You can lose a lot of money very quickly, I'm sure you can imagine. And some companies have backed away from that now, but Riskify is still, you know, very much in that space and providing what we call covered decisions. So those are the two big things that make Riskify different. The third thing is around expanding now to other problems like refund abuse, discount code or promo abuse, and reseller abuse. And some other things as well. But you know, Riskify is more of a platform than a product now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do remember when the guarantee came in, if you like, and the sort of gasps. Everybody was trying to figure out what the fraud was in the guarantee, if you like, because it's like surely nobody can be, you know, seriously offering this. And like you say, I think some others stepped in and stepped away. It must make your job easier when you're talking to potential customers, if you like, to sort of offer that backstop of, and if we do get it wrong, we're so guaranteed, we'll even get our own checkbook out.
Yeah, it helps open doors and it gets conversations going, but inevitably where the conversation goes is the concern is raised, well, in order to cover chargebacks, how many of our transactions are you going to decline and how conservative are you going to be, okay, right? And that's where it starts to get interesting. And for us, the penny tends to drop when the realization is made that the opposite actually happens, because with machine learning that's been engineered for 12 years is so highly accurate now, you get not only a chargeback guarantee, but you get an approval rate uplift, which we commit to contractually, right? So it starts to become a very compelling business case when you're talking about increasing conversion as well as covering chargebacks. But the interesting part for us is that when we look at companies and analyze what's out there today with other vendors, the majority of those false declines tend to be first-time customers. So the businesses are actually losing more than the face value of the transaction. They're losing the potential repeat business and customer lifetime value of that customer. And that's where even a 1% or 2% or 3% approval rate uplift, if the vast majority of those are first-time customers, it starts to get really interesting. So, you know, we love the space we're in, and we love helping e-commerce businesses capture more of those first-time customers as well.
Yeah, that is fascinating. The first-time customer, because you're quite right. If as a first-time customer, I get declined on a merchant site, not only am I probably never going to go back, I'm going to tell 10 people about it as well, at least, and correct, maybe even post it online. So, there's a big whammy there. So interesting that. So from your perspective, what does the e-commerce landscape sort of look like in Australia, New Zealand right now? You know, what's going on? You know, how's it settled back after we can still mention the COVID word just about. So what's your perspective on it?
Yeah, look, still off COVID highs, I think generally is the state of the market. If I had to pick one word though that really describes it, I think it would be competition, right? Like when we talk to e-commerce players, whether it's in retail or other industries, I think there's a general acceptance now that that your existing competitors are competing extremely hard, looking for these edges, like looking for these one percenters, if I can call them that, to sharpen up the customer experience or convert more customers or shave cost out of the online business and improve profitability. So there's that, but then there's new entrants. I mean, we've seen what Temu has done with the US retail market. I mean, they arrived yesterday. And when you look at the user download stats and look at, you know, their model, you know, I subscribe to the thought that, you know, others like Amazon and AliExpress have paved the way for Temu to come in, and they've just got it right from day one. So I think no one's resting on their laurels. Everyone is hustling, trying to have the best user experience possible, and automate and streamline and remove as many manual processes as possible, which is a big part of what we come in and do as well. So I think that, yeah, that continual healthy level of fear is what I'm seeing with regards to competition. And again, like, who knows who the players are going to be in each space in a year's time from now. We think that disruption will only accelerate, not decelerate. So, you know, there's an old saying which I love, which is the more you sweat in peace, the less you bleed in war. And those retailers that are really working hard now to do everything that they can to optimize their online business and their customer experience will be ready for those surprises when they happen. Those that aren't pushing the envelope and adopting new technology to be at the forefront, that they're going to have a tougher time if someone comes in and competes in their space.
Yeah, I think if you look at those retailers that have failed over the recent years, sadly, and on many, almost universally across the board, you can see a lack of investment that's gone in. Their technology's fallen behind. During COVID, those that hadn't invested were just scrambling around trying to get online because they didn't have a solution. So, yeah, do you see more of the same? Is it? Do you see the traditional retailers generally being, you know, on the money and changing and evolving? Is it the new entrants? I mean, what's your sort of crystal ball? You mentioned you see more disruption on the way. Is that the buzzword, you think, going forward for the next few years?
I think there's no one answer for everyone. Like, we see some retailers that are very tech savvy and understand the not only the value, but the importance of staying on the cutting edge, especially of AI and machine learning. And they understand the value and the benefits it drives into the business. Then there are others that I would say are less focused on optimizing in our space. That's not to say they're not optimizing in other spaces, like in shipping or logistics or inventory. Like, I don't envy being a retailer because there are so many different moving parts in those businesses. How do you know which one to optimize, right? What we find is that these are ROI-based decisions, right? So if the business is looking at 10 projects that they could implement right across the retail business, if you're a CFO, you're going to implement the one that's going to give you the biggest bang for buck if you can only choose one or two. So, you know, we very much subscribe to that approach and thinking, and would only recommend our solution if there was a compelling ROI on the table. So we don't just sort of say, hey, chargeback guarantee is great and AI is great and you'll get all these wonderful benefits. No, that's not enough in this day and age. You really need to calculate a very conservative but accurate ROI for the client and with the client, so that they can go, okay, do I optimize my fraud prevention? Do I optimize my logistics? Do I, you know, look at something else? And that way it becomes much clearer on, you know, where the priority and where the resources could go, because everyone's resources are constrained at the moment. There's no business in the world that I know of anyway that doesn't have constrained resources. And so we see that as our responsibility to help build that ROI. To make it clear as to, you know, the value that's really on the table here. And some merchants are ready for that. Others are focused on other areas of the business. But we still, you know, fight the good fight and try to get the message out there.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're right. You know, the CFO's probably got, you know, 25 urgent projects that need funding all simultaneously. And it is. And actually, you know, sometimes it is the supply chain that needs putting in place first, or the inventory management that needs sorting out before, I guess, they come and have the conversation with you. Now, I'm interested, given the chargeback guarantee and given what's evolving with sort of the merchants themselves, yeah, how do you know, it's a noisy space. Yeah, how does Riskified sort of, you know, differentiate itself in the market? You know, is it just a case of ringing up and going, we're Riskified, can we have a conversation? You know, how do you sort of get out there? Do you have customers that will come forward and say, yes, we use the solution, and they act as reference clients? What's the kind of picture, if you like, that you've got?
Yeah, look, we've got some really supportive clients, not only in ANZ, but around the world. You know, we work with three of the largest e-commerce businesses globally, but also here in Australia, we work with six of the top 20. So they're big advocates for us. They'll introduce us to others that they know, excuse me, and that they're networked with. But the thing that's really differentiating us now, aside from the chargeback guarantee and the online fraud decision, because you're right, that is a crowded space, is on the customer abuse and the refund and returns abuse side. This we're finding is just as big, if not an even bigger cost for retailers, where customers might be claiming, hey, I never received the package, when they actually did. And the retailer has to make a tough decision. Do I actually give this person the refund and write this sale off and the loss, or do I hold firm and say no? Now, most retailers say, yeah, you can have the refund, because they don't want to upset a good customer. But what we are finding and seeing more and more is that out there in the market, there are abusers who are serial abusers or professional abusers who create fake names, fake emails, fake phone numbers, fake addresses, or obfuscated addresses. And when they ask for a refund and say, hey, it never arrived, or it was damaged, or whatever else, it's not their first time. They've done it multiple times before, and you require a network such as ours and technology such as ours to see when somebody's taking you for a ride from a refund perspective, and when it's a legitimate customer who should get the refund. So we find it about anywhere 15 to 25% of all refunds and returns are abusive when we switch that on. And that's a shock. Like, that's a big shock, because most retailers would say maybe 1% or 2% are abusive, and I'm happy to let that go as a cost of doing business and keeping customers happy. But when they see it's actually more like 15 to 25%, you could hear a pin drop. And so that is a space that we're really differentiating in now. And as I said, you know, we have a platform of services such as that, not just one product. So if one product isn't the right fit for whatever reason at that time, maybe the business isn't looking to review their online fraud prevention, preventing refund abuse may resonate and may be something that they're interested in. So we try to tailor the conversation for what's important and relevant for each company.
And that's fascinating, because, you know, we run physical retail risk events on five continents. And one of the threads that we hear is people bemoaning the fact that you can go online and buy a document, buy a book that will tell you how to commit refund fraud against various retailers, because there aren't systems in places. And they're sort of, you know, you can see exasperated about, well, how do we start to deal with this? And we've seen some interesting solutions around the world. But I guess to have that as a plugin where you can start to aggregate that data and come up, because that is a unbelievable number. You know, a few years ago, it was all about people sort of shrink figures in stores. And when they finally understood what they were, they started to deploy technology to improve them, because they were way worse than we all thought they were in stores. I mean, this feels like the sort of the next frontier to start to, you know, turn the ratchet on these people. So yeah, amazing solution. And I guess that, like you say, that is the one that gets the silence in the room and the interest.
Yeah, and you touched on something really interesting there, is that you can buy guides on the dark web on how to commit refund scams. And so we actually had one example in the US where we were reviewing refunds and returns, and we found one individual had created 160 different customer aliases to perform serial habitual wholesale refund abuse against one retailer. So, I mean, it happens. And the dark web is a very collaborative space. It's incredible how much fraudsters and abusers actually help each other and coach each other and guide each other on how to do this. And what we find is that experienced abusers coach and mentor the beginners and the novices. And you know, it's incredibly supportive and helpful the way they do that. So You know, we know it happens. It's just a matter of how much it's happening against each individual retailer. And, you know, I always take the view that you always want to be the hardest target because they will go elsewhere. Whereas if you're an easy target and you have no defense, they'll keep hitting you again and again and again. And that's just the nature of the industry that we work in.
Yeah, it's you're quite right. The collaboration that goes on between the bad actors is just, you know, off the chart. You know, if ever there was a reason for retailers to talk to each other and to collaborate by bringing data together with people like yourself, you've only got to look what goes on with the bad guys and girls and the speed which you know they're sharing information and WhatsApp groups and various networks that they've got. It is it's privy to it, unfortunate to see it, whatever approach you want to take, but it is just and when people change rules in the technology or use different providers, that information is out there, you know, at the speed of light. So, you know, trying to get ahead, deploying new bits of technology to fight back. I mean, it's the only way, isn't it, at the minute? It is just a constant battle.
Yeah, no, 100%. And you're right. They're, you know, those people that play in this space, they're pretty good. They know what they're doing to a certain extent, but you can catch them out. And the last thing anyone wants is to decline a good customer, of course, because that creates all sorts of other problems. But you can start by just declining the worst of the worst, you know, those that are taking you for an absolute ride, and then you can refine it and, you know, move the threshold to your, what we call the sweet spot as more and more data comes in. But you're right. A platform such as ours allows multiple retailers to leverage each other's data to fight back against this, collaborative cohort that is out there.
Yeah, absolutely imperative. Now, I'm delighted to say that you're going to be joining us at Retail Risk Sydney at the end of February 29th. We're making use of the extra day in the leap year to most effect. So what can people expect to see on the day from you guys and girls, other than your big smile or those of your team on the stand? What are the sort of the conversations if people come up to you?
Yeah, sure. Look, we tend to find that most of the interest in terms of that comes into us at events like Retail Risk is around how much can we reduce our false fraud declines, our false positives, because we're really interested in a conversion uplift. Or it might be, what are we doing around non-fraud chargebacks? Because we can't prevent those and they're an issue for us. And then, you know, refunds and returns as well are very closely related to those, as you might imagine. So, but every business is different. But look, we'll be there to not only answer questions, but to share our insights on, you know, what we're seeing in our own data with large retailers here in Australia, such as, Bunnings, JB Hi-Fi, Chemist Warehouse. We're seeing trends in the market across our data set, and you know, we're very happy to share those at a very high level. But also, I think workshop specific problems, like if you've got a particular pain point, a particular challenge, you know, the team and I, we love to workshop them and think about them and see if we can figure out what the best plan of attack would be. So we'd love to meet as many people there as possible. And it's an opportunity for us to hear what's going on in the market too from everybody else. So, you know, we love that interaction and we hope people stop by the booth.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to that. It's always one of my favorites as well. So, that'll be terrific. Now, finally, what next for Riskified or yourself in the sort of short, medium term? Like you say, you don't know what's going to be happening necessarily, but what's coming down the pipeline for you guys over the sort of 12, 24 months?
Yeah, look, I think aside from the refunds and returns side of the equation, which is, you know, really resonating at the moment, account takeovers is a big topic that we solve for as well. We've actually been seeing some new attack MOs when it comes to account takeovers where fraudsters are logging in, taking over an account. They're changing the shipping address, but not actually buying anything and waiting for the customer to buy something, and whatever they buy is getting shipped directly to the fraudster. And because those orders look great because they are being placed by the genuine customer. So there's always new MOs coming out that we're looking to thwart, and account takeovers aside from refunds and returns, is really starting to be an area of focus after some recent attacks. So I think account takeovers, I think non-fraud chargebacks and refunds and returns are probably going to be the hot topics for the next 12 months.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Nicholas, thank you so much for taking the time to join me. I look forward to meeting you in person at Retail Risk Sydney. Absolutely fascinating what you've got to share. So looking forward to that. But for now, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate the time.